where we were. We've established, as far as Revived USF is concerned, and right now we're only in Revived USF's universe, right? We're not necessarily agreeing with him on everything, but we're working within the frame of reference he establishes, which we may disestablish at some point down the road. So in his universe, we have established that we Paskin, that there is a prohibition against redeeming captives above, ordinarily, a prohibition against redeeming captives above their market price, however market price is defined, that prohibition applies to everyone except wives, and except yourself and wives, and that the reason for that prohibition is because we're afraid that if we redeem captives above their price, that will lead to there being more captives, and it's not a direct economic concern. Right? Each of those assumptions is challengeable. We could say that it's not a prohibition, it's just the absence of an obligation to redeem captives above the market price, which I argued might be the position of the Ramah against the Mechaber. We could paskin that wives are an example of people with whom one has a particular emotional relationship and not unique to wives. And we could paskin that we care about both reasons, both about the concern that there'll be more captives and the concerns about the immediate economic impact, not only on the Jewish people as a whole, but even on individuals. We saw one position who said the reason that we don't force husbands to redeem wives repeatedly above their market value is because we worry about husbands' economic position the same way we worry about communal economic positions. But in Rav Avadia's universe, we have settled all those questions. Okay, so we're working on the assumption that there is a prohibition against redeeming captives other than wives at more than their market value because of fear that will lead to there being more captives. Okay, now Rav Avadia began his working on that assumption, which in a sense is a worst case scenario for what he's trying to do, because he's trying to find a ground for telling the family of the Entebbe's captives that in fact the government is allowed to negotiate, including the release of prisoners, even if the release of prisoners with blood on their hands is an obvious violation of the rationale that we're going to cause them to hijack more planes. Right, so he's given himself a worst case scenario. There's a prohibition that applies to everyone, and the ground for it is concern for the future. And despite that, he says there are two cases in the Gemara that seem to indicate that there are at the very least other exceptions beyond wives to this rule. One of the exceptions is the story of Rabbi Shua, right? This is, we're on page 7, right? On Gittin Nun Chadam and Aleph, where Rabbi Huna ben Hananiah goes to what he says is the Krach Gadol Shebaromi, whatever that means, because the Krach is a city, so what it means is the Krach Gadol Shebaromi, right? They have some kind of notion of the geography of Rome, which may or may not correspond to to what we know as the geography of Rome. And there they tell him there is a child in the Beit HaSurim who is attractive, and he goes and tests the child, and the child completes the pasuk he recites, and therefore he decides he's going to redeem this captive. Right? He swears, I'm not going to leave here until I redeem this captive Jewish child for whatever the demand is, and he ends up redeeming the child, who turns out to be Rishvel ben Elisha. But he pays a huge price, much more than the child would have fetched at auction, presumably. Otherwise, the story is not terribly interesting. But okay, right? Maybe you could say maybe the child was affected an enormous amount of auction. We could get out of it that way. No one does that I know of. Okay, that's the first story, right? So what justifies Rabbi Shua ben Hananiah in overpaying for this kid? Okay, second story. This is Gittin Memvav Amud Bet. We have a story of somebody who sells himself to a tribe that we will, for purposes, assume are cannibals. And therefore, there is a very likely possibility that selling himself to them as a slave will end up in his being eaten.
Does he know they're cannibals?
Yeah, he does. I apparently don't eat all their slaves. Right? But it's considered to be a highly risky thing. Again, I don't know who the Lidoi are, whether they correspond to any historical group or not. So now he comes and he asks to be redeemed, right? He wants the Jews to pay to redeem him from slavery to these Lidoi. And the person, right, and Rav Ami, who he comes to the first time, thinks that he has a reasonable case, because there's a Mishnah which says that somebody who sells himself and his sons into slavery to non-Jews, we don't redeem him, but we do redeem his sons. Okay, we don't redeem him because it's an obvious economic subterfuge. All right, you sell your sell yourself, right? Sell your, if we announce that every time a Jew sells himself to slavery, right, to slavery to a non-Jew, we're going to redeem him. So that's just a way of satisfying your debts. Right, sell yourself into slavery and then put yourself on the community to pay your debts. Right, so we can't, right? So we understand that's obviously that we, that's why we don't redeem anybody immediately, right? But we redeem their children because we figure that it's enough of a disincentive that we won't redeem you. Okay, so why not redeem, why not refuse to redeem the children also as a, right, as a punishment? So the answer is we're afraid the children will be inducted into idolatry, right? Let's assume that's the simplest. All right, that's the simplest reading, that they'll be inducted into idolatry. That's what Kilkula means. Okay, so now so Ravami, when he's responding to this person, says, aha, so if we redeem the children because of Kilkula, so all the more so we should redeem you here, right? Closing the Hacha, Deika Ketala. So all the more so here. So everyone immediately has to point out, what do you mean, B'kol Shekein Hacha? We redeem the children because the children didn't sell themselves into slavery as an, right, as a way to get the community to pay their debts. Here he did sell himself into slavery. So, right, so the Kol Shekein doesn't work at all because, right, right, because if we redeem the children because we're afraid that they'll, right, they'll assimilate, so all the more so we must redeem him. No, we don't redeem him. In the other, right, if he sells himself into slavery to ordinary Gentiles, we don't, right, so we don't redeem him, right? So the argument is very difficult to follow. Right, like what is it? Right, what does he mean? The kol shekein halacha. Secondly, it also all sort of other places in halacha, we tend to think that the risk of becoming an idolater is equivalent to pikuach nefesh. So why is it a kol shekein? If we redeem, right, if we redeem the kids to avoid them being, right, growing up idolaters, so kol shekein, we're worried about it being killed. Maybe, maybe not. Right? You know, how do we view spiritual as opposed to, right, spiritual as opposed to physical death? Not obvious either. In any case, Ravami loses because it turns, right, because his colleagues tell him that this guy specifically, because he's a mumer, doesn't deserve, isn't worth redeeming anyway. We have no obligation to him anyway. Nonetheless, right, here we have a story in which somebody has an idea that the ordinary rules about redeeming captives, or the ordinary restrictions on redeeming captives, are relaxed in a case where there's a risk of death. Okay, right. That's the maximal way of reading this case is: look, here is a case where normally we wouldn't redeem him because he's just a guy who sold himself into slavery, which we don't redeem, but because we're afraid he's going to get eaten, which is just an example of being killed, right? So we redeem him. Okay. All right, so those are the two narratives Rav Avadia starts with. Okay, so now we're going to turn to page 8. We're going to read Rav Avadia's presentation of the way he's going to end up with three Rishonim, taking on this evidence. First, Tosfos, and Tosfos in a number of places. Secondly, the Ramban, and finally, the Meiri. So here is, he says, Hinei Tosfos Gitin Sham Kasfu Bezel Shonam. Right, it's half a page 8. Right, that they shouldn't, right? That we learned in a Brisa in Ketubos, right, about this is about the wife, that we do redeem a wife above her market value the first time she's captured. So his answer is line 4, Shani Ishto Davi Kegufo Adifo Mibito Dehacha. Right, so your wife is different. Just because we redeem your wife doesn't mean that even though redeeming your wife may cause there to be more captives in the future because they'll say, Jews redeem their wives. Doesn't matter. Ishto Dehavya Kegufo, his wife is like himself. Vadifo Mibito Dehacha. And remember the Gemara there, right, said, how can you claim there's a prohibition against redeeming captives when Levi ben Darga redeemed his daughter at an exorbitant price? The answer, right? And the only answer the Gemara can give for that is maybe Levi ben Darka did so against the rabbi's will. Right? Why didn't they just answer that daughters like wives or part of you? So the answer is no. Daughters are not like wives, right? Wives are more like the husband's body than daughters. Right? Tosfos here doesn't give the explanation that the wife has her own money, right? That doesn't because it's part of her ketubah, he doesn't give that answer at all. Okay. So just like you can redeem yourself, because they would never have made a rule that you're not allowed to redeem yourself, because we know that people will give whatever they want to save their lives. So it would be the implication seems to be it would be silly to try to make a takana preventing people from redeeming themselves no matter the costs. It just wouldn't work. Nobody would listen. So by the same token, people won't listen if we make the same rule about their about wives. Okay. Very romantic. But then he gives the second answer, which matters to us. He says, Inami bish'as churban habayit lo shayech del ligruvu. And right, Rishu Bechanania's story takes place at the time of the second destruction. And at that point, there's no concern that things will get worse. I will see a better formulation of this later in Ramban. But that's what it sounds like, right? Well, the time of the Churban, right? So, right, and there's somebody captured by the Romans. What, the Romans are going to go attack Judea again? Right, there's no Judea left, right? So when you can create a situation where there's no risk of things getting worse in terms of people hijacking you, right, capturing you. So that's right. So that's the answer of Shubha Chanania. So that doesn't help us very much, except the only thing it does is sometimes when you make rabbinic decrees, we say lo plug, right? That it doesn't matter whether the rationale applies or not. We'll still enforce it. So it says, no, this is not one of the things where we're going to say lo plug. If you can construct a circumstance where the rationale doesn't apply, we're not going to apply it. Right? Maybe because this underlying mitzvah, to redeem captives. So we're not going to try to, create a formal rule against it. When there's a good reason to prevent you from doing the mitzvah, we'll prevent you. But when there isn't a good reason, we're going to revert to the mitzvah of redeeming captives. Okay. So that's Tosfos number one. Tosfos says that the answer of about Rav Shua ben Chanania is that Rav Shua ben Chanania was dealing with a case that has no parallels in other points in history. That wouldn't help us at all. Right? If the Entebbe captives, right, there was very much a real risk that things would get worse and that, right, and the hijackings would become more common. So this Tosfos doesn't, right, and wives are unique. So the first Tosfos seems to give Rav Avadia no help at all. But now he quotes a second Tosfos. I'm getting Daf Nun Chet. He writes about this. Rosh Hashanah, he writes something different. He says, "V'afal pish ein podnes v'shvuim yoter michnei demei mitmet konolam mikol makom kishuyesh sakanat nefashot podin af biyoter michnei demei." Second answer is this kid was in danger, and when a kid is in danger, the whole rule was only about redeeming captives who would only suffer their captivity. It's bad to be in prison. It's right. It's bad to be right. But if there's no risk of them being killed, so then we have this rule. But when it comes, there's a risk of being killed. Then we can redeem them even more than their values. He quotes the second example. And he quotes the second story. Right. So he says the second story where Rabbi Ami said, "Kol shekein hachadik ktala." We redeemed the guy who sold himself to the Ludaim. That's the explanation of Rabbi Shua ben Chanania also, that he was afraid this child would be killed. Inami, he says, alternatively, Mishun de Muflog Bechach Bahaya, or maybe because the kid was special. Okay, I was asking, like, what makes, right? So now we have two categories of exceptions, wives and very, very sharp kids.
All this at the risk that the attack will be more provoked.
Yeah.
But they will...
But we'll balance that because they picked the right one. Now isn't that terrible? Because now they're gonna go. They know who to pick, right? They'll pick the kids with the most potential. So the answer is they're probably not any better at drafting than the average NFL general manager. How do you know? They'll try to get it, but they'll probably get the wrong kids, right? You know, we will in the end, find the true Brock Purdy's of the world, because we, when redeemed captives, right, we know. Right, we know who the top kids are, but we're not worried about the captives having really good about the captors having really good choice. Okay, both these answers to Tosfos are very odd. The first answer seems to assume that the kid is the only kid in captivity, because presumably the kid is not uniquely in Sakanat Nefashot. Right, and nobody had told us there's anything unique about the kid's captivity. It's not unique about the kid. Nothing unique about the captivity. So why does he, right? So if he can redeem him, he should be able to redeem everybody.
Well, isn't this dealing with a case of one person who sold himself and his...
No. The kid in the... We should have been dealing with the kid in Rome. Right. It tells us that the kid in Rome, uh-huh. Right? Because, right, we learn from the case of the guy who came in captivity that if somebody is... That implies that that kid is the only kid being threatened with death. That's a really weird... construction of the case. That kid is right. The whole point of the is seems to be that there are lots of people in jail, but they tell you, honey, but this kid is special. So Joseph says, no, there's nothing special about that kid at all. Or if he's special, what's special is only that he's at risk of death. Yeah, why they didn't say, which kind of like that he's at risk of, right, because he's attractive, that he's at risk of being sexually violated, right, which would have been a simpler answer, I don't know. So Tosis gives this answer, but just as in the original sugya, we don't know what it, right, it's very hard to understand this answer. It's very hard to understand this answer as applied from this sugya to another sugya, right? It just gets worse and worse, right? We're didn't like the old answer, and now you're using it to generate new cases. Okay, but at least we have two possible answers for the case, or we have three possible answers now. We have the Shas Churban HaBayit, we have the Sagadat Nefashot, and we have the Muflag B'Chachma. Because everybody says the Zelashon Piskei HaTosfot Gitin Ot Resh Tezayin. The Piskei HaTosfot is a later generation of Tosafists. Assembling what they think the psakim were of the earlier Tosafot, and there's a whole debate about how much authority to give the Piskei HaTosafot, but in this Tshuva Rav Avadya gives it pretty much absolute authority. And he says, right, the Piskei HaTosafot says, says that we paskin like both of these answers, right? Kishreis sekanat nevashot, but din shvi oter bichdei demand, o b'muflag b'chachma. So right, so they take it a Tosafot paskining. That the latter two rationales, we forget the Shas HaKorban because that has no relevance l'alacha at all. But the other two answers Tosafos gives, even though either of them is sufficient to explain the story, it turns out that either of them is sufficient to explain the story, and therefore we treat both of them as valid halachically. Even though the story can't prove more than one of them. Right? Tosafos has no evidence, right? You can't say Tosafos has evidence for both positions. But you can say that Tosfos thought that either of these answers was a sufficient explanation because Tosfos believed both of these answers. He didn't, right? So the Piskei Tosfos doesn't treat them as either ors; he treats them as both ands. Okay. All that's going to matter to us is that means that sakadat nefashot, right? The risk of death is sufficient to justify overpaying for a price. Okay. And furthermore, he says the Marikash says the same thing because when the Shulchan Aruch says, right, aval adam yachol lifto atzmo b'chol mashir tse, v'chein l'talmid chacham. Right, so they're right. So first of all, Shulchan Aruch says you can redeem yourself and you can redeem a talmid chacham. So we have generalized the kid who is super super harif into all talmid chachamim can be redeemed from captivity above their price, even though obviously that makes talmid chachamim captives. I mean, targets. Okay, but on that the Marikash writes v'chein im yesh sakana, podina tan yoter al k'day demehen. Okay, so therefore, says Rav Avadya, Lefize, this is Rav Avadya himself saying, Benidon didon, in our case, Shiyesh sakana vada'it lemea yudim ha'chatufim, there is definite danger to the 100 Jews who are hijacked because the hijackers said we're going to start killing them on Sunday, right, originally on Thursday and then postponing it to Sunday unless you release these captives. Right? Originally they said we'll kill you on Thursday and then the government agreed to negotiate and so they postponed it until Sunday and then meanwhile on Saturday night the Entebbe mission goes in and solves it, but by the time Rav Avadya is considering the issue, which is before Thursday, right? The captors have threatened to kill them, so they're 100 Jews in immediate risk of death because we assume the captives are trustworthy when they say they're going to kill them. Okay, that's a whole separate question about how you know when people are serious when they threaten to kill people. Guys are big enough in it because can you kill them or not? At this point, I always put an Odd Couple episode. In which Felix disappeared. You know, the Odd Couple has two characters, Oscar and Felix. Right, so Felix is very annoying. I think it's that Felix disappears, and so they start a murder investigation. Of course, Oscar is the suspect, and everybody testifies to the many times that Oscar said, "I'm going to kill you, Felix." and so he's just about to be convicted when Felix turns up alive. Right, so that's, you know, so the point of that episode is that you can't treat a criminal threat as necessarily, and so now you ask me what's nafkamina is rooted. Right, you're allowed to kill somebody because they threaten to kill you or somebody else on the assumption. So there is a Piskei Tshuvot, I think, I forget, right? Not the later versions, but a much 19th century anthology, which says that it depends. Talmidei Chachamim sometimes threaten people and don't mean it, but Amei Ha'aretz really mean it. So you can kill an Amei Ha'aretz if the Amei Ha'aretz threatens you. I once told one of my teacher, J. David Blythe, who is famous for having a very high standard for moving from Amei Ha'aretz to Talmid Chacham, that I come with the perfect murder plot. Just get somebody to threaten to kill you, and then ask Rabbi Blythe the question. You'll certainly pass through the Amei Ha'aretz. and now you can. Anyway, he left. okay, so right. So Rav Avadia says that if we take this Tosfos, if we take this Tosfos lahalacha as the Piskei Tosfos did, as the Marikash did, and we say that the rule against redeeming captives above their market value doesn't apply if there's a risk of killing the captives, then the government can, then even if releasing prisoners is above market value, the government can do it. Right? That's the straightforward thing. Of course, what will, you know, the other risk here is that captors will learn that what they have to do is threaten Jews' lives. Right? So there are all sorts of really terrible policy implications from this, but this is the way Ravadi constructs the argument. However, he says, Ibra, but the Chazi, the Havit, the Ramban, the Chidush of the Gittin, Shikasa, Bezalashim. All right, the question whether, irony or not, Ravadia always uses sight to talk about his sources, which might be an irony because Ravadia, sight is very poor by the time he's writing. And everything is, he can still read, I think, on occasion, but his sight is very poor by this point, but he always writes, I saw. but different metaphors, different vision metaphors. Okay, seriously, so I saw the Ramban who wrote the following. If you're bothered by the statement in Gittin, where Rabbi Shu Bechania says, right, he swears right by the service of the temple, I will not move from here until I redeem this kid with all the money that they ask. But ain't putting a shrimp to Yosher, how could you do that? So his first answer is, Yesh lomar, dehasa mari bish'asa churban, that's what Tosfos' first answer was, deleka mishum deligare behu belai sitve, and here's his rationale of what's different about the churban, is share kulam halchu bashevi. Everybody is in captivity, so it can't get any worse. Okay, that doesn't fit at all with Tosfos' second answer, that the kid is at risk, and no one else is at risk, but that's the... Right, that's a really good answer. Is the bottom line. That's a really good answer for why that case is different, because there's no public policy concerns about anything getting worse for the Romans. If you're worried about impoverishing the community, so yeah, you can worry about impoverishing the community, but you don't have to worry that anything worse will happen. Okay, so that's his first answer. Right, and the Ramban generally is built on the outcomes of Tosfos. And Ramban is later. He has the Tosafists in front of him, right? How he self conceives is a whole complicated question. Professor Septimus had a famous claim that the Ramban self conceived as a continuation of Sfarad, and there was a recent article. Now I'm blanking on who it was, which is not good. Somebody listening on the tape will surely write to me. Very recent, very very good piece of scholarship. And I should remember who it is. So I apologize that I don't. Which really argued that Professor Septimus' thesis didn't hold at all. And the Ramban, like, it makes no sense. The Ramban, in Christian Spain, to see himself as a continuation of Muslim Spain, and he sees himself as it's a different culture. But okay, Ramban. But there's no, from a simple Balbatish level, the Ramban has Tosfos in front of him, even though the Ramban is Spanish and the Tosfos are German and German and French. His work is built on top of theirs, even though it may not be that he sees himself as an organic continuation of their tradition. He may be doing something else entirely. Okay, so if he quotes Tosfos' first answer, so now he quotes Tosfos' second answer. The Yesh Omrim, D'chol Hechad Ikach Shasha D'Misa, Podem Osom B'chol Mamon Shechol Niftosam. No, whenever there's a risk of death, you redeem them with whatever there is to redeem, whatever you can. And Ramban says, "Velo mistaber," but that makes no sense. The whole Chevy kulu isnube, because he goes back to Gemara we saw a couple of weeks ago, the Gemara in Bava Basra, which is a whole source for the primacy of redeeming captives over other mitzvot. And the Gemara says, well, redeeming captives is greater than is more important than saving people from famine or even saving people, the Gemara says, from other kinds of death, because captivity has all the horrors of the world tied into it. The Ramban says, what are you talking about? Captivity already includes the risk of death. So how could you possibly say that death is different? Right, the whole reason captivity always includes the risk of the death. And then secondly, it says, like, you know, like, if we're willing to not redeem women when there's a risk of rape, then certainly we should not be able to redeem men at risk of death. That's a separate argument which doesn't matter to us. And then he deals with the final answer that maybe Talmidei Chachamim are different and Rishua do it all. But what matters to us is just that line. He says, I don't understand how the risk of death could make anything different. That's why we always redeem captives. That's why the mitzvah is important. So we could at this point retroject, and we could say that what's coming up here is a problem that Halacha has had to deal with for at least several hundred years, which is we have a statement which says, Pikuach Nefesh is Docheh Kol HaTorah Kulah. Okay, right? You can violate everything to save a life. Now we have another statement which says, Pikuach Nefesh Ein Holchin Achar Harov. That when it comes to Pikuach Nefesh, you don't have to have a 51% chance of dying. You could have an 0.001% chance of dying. So now that just leads to Halacha, right? You know, Halacha being set aside left and right. Right, Ribbono Shel Olam, you could end up with doctors carrying radios and things like that on Shabbos. And all sorts of terrible things could happen if you started to allow it. The questions that came up already in the Nodi Behuda and then the Chassam Sofer is, why don't we allow medical production facilities to run on Shabbos? So there's a chance that otherwise there won't be enough material. Why don't we allow medical schools to run on Shabbos? Right. How do we prevent Pikuach Nefesh from taking over the world? Sandler had a different version of it. It's two very way of asking, like, why can we spend money on anything but medical, we complain about the percentage of the GDP that medical care takes in the U.S., but it should be 99%. Right, so there has to be a way to limit the reach of Pikuach Nefesh, and people have been trying for hundreds of years to try and find ways to consistently limit the reach of Pikuach Nefesh so that there's something left that it doesn't achieve. Most famously, Nodi Behuda gives the answer of Chol Lefanenu, we only suspend prohibitions when there's a specific patient in front of us who needs it. Now his context is autopsies to discover to find out information. But the problem is that was like a brilliant answer. Whenever I give the shir, but it didn't. It was a brilliant stopgap answer because it solved a particular problem, but instantaneous communication immediately undid it. Because then every chola is practically in front of you. And to say that we care about the chola being physically in front of you, as opposed to you having getting the information, there, that makes it very hard to do. And this was exposed once again. Autopsies itself was a big issue when the state of Israel was set up, but it was exposed once again when the question became about COVID and respirators. Whether the category, the notion of whether there's a sick person in front of you or not. Some will argue that you couldn't triage at all. You just had to give it to the person in front of you, and that was so counter to hospital ethics that it couldn't work. So they ended up having to expend Chol Lefanenu to patients who are patients already on the way to the hospital, and then they extended to patients who are statistically likely to be on the way to the hospital. And eventually, the standard didn't mean anything. There are other attempts. There, in the current Turo Medical Journal, the first issue, really excellent journal, Mayor Tversky tried to argue that their circumstances were one in a thousand odds are directly a thing based on R.Q. Eger. People trying distinguishing direct and indirect. The simpler answer would be sliding scale. I just say, right, that the degree of risk, the degree and severity of risk, right, generate, allows you to violate some things, not other things. That's very sloppy. that the Buddha rejected it out of hand. He said that Pikkulah Nefesh is an old, right, is a digital switch. Either it's Docha everything or it's not even Docha Drabbanans. And he said it that way. Now that's very hard to sustain. Because intuitively, there's some things, well, I wouldn't violate Deraisa for that, but I would violate Drabbanan for that, but like there's no criteria. So we could say that, look, you know what, Pikkulah Nefesh is a great mitzvah because it has some kind of Pikkulah Nefesh in it, even though that's not the kind of Pikkulah Nefesh that would cause you to be Docha Shabbos. But right, Deraisa. We could try and set up a category like that, and that's what's going to have to happen. But what we're confronting right now is this challenge is one that still goes on all throughout halacha, is trying to figure out a way in which we can emphasize how important Pikkulah Nefesh is, and yet not have Pikkulah Nefesh take over all of life, so that all of life is just organized around Pikkulah Nefesh, which sounds beautiful. But you know, in the novels, you know, at some point people always realize that there has to be something to live for. Right? That's the hit somebody. Okay. So we have the way Ravadia sets it up, we have Tosfot. Tosfot says it, and the Piskei Tosfot reinforces it, so does Mari Kash, which says that whatever the rules are we set up about Pikkulah Nefesh, they don't apply to Sakanat Nefeshot. And right, you know, right, you know, when the rabbi has made a decree, they only made a decree against suspending the mitzvah of Pidyon Shvuyim. They didn't suspend the mitzvah of Pikkulah Nefesh. And that, right, then you think of it that way, you just say, okay, why would the rabbis ever say, no, you're not allowed to save someone's life?
Well, you can imagine if there's a trade-off between something like, you know, the downside of Pidyon Shvuyim and...
But there you can see that... that's a really hard thing, right? To say, like, you know, like, you know, if you can imagine, this, let that person drown. Mm-hmm. Because we're afraid that if you don't let that person drown, then more people will be drowned. That's a very hard thing to. That's a very, very hard thing to say, particularly if that person who's being drowned will actually be saved, as other people will be drowned.
If you save that person from drowning. Right.
Then people will come.
Other people will be less averse. Then many people will be less averse to go out there than they otherwise might have been. And as you're going to end up with.
Yeah. So you more people. You really think that we're going to make the decree, right? You know that if you see someone drowning at a beach where it says no swimming without a lifeguard, there was no lifeguard. Don't save them because that's a good lesson for them.
Well,
everyone will learn.
That was a good lesson for everybody else.
For everybody else, right? So you will lower the incidence of drowning, by right? So we issue a decree against saving people. It's hard. That'd be very hard to do.
Well, it is, but you can imagine a calculus where you're sacrificing one life to save half a dozen others or whatever.
Yeah. So I usually am very machmir to say no. We don't choose among lives.
Sure. Or quantity.
Right. Even among quantity of lives, I'm usually very machmir about that. You can say, look, you know, they're, you know, it's even better because they're like it's people making their own decisions. As opposed to, you know, here it's more like X is trying to kill Y, and if you say right, but if you save them, so then X is probably going to go off and try to kill more people in frustration. Mm-hmm. They don't think that way, no, right? X is trying to kill Y, you save Y. Right? That's, you know, there's only so cold-blooded one can be. I think that's a, you know, if we think about it again, that we have as a decree to suspend the mitzvah, so to suspend the mitzvah really of saving lives, that might be a bridge. That might be a bridge too far, or not, right? Maybe that's, you know, we think of the public policy enough. Maybe so. I would have a hard time. I'd have a very hard time thinking of making a decree like that. Right. So that, I think that's the.
Ultimately, I mean, that kind of calculus is what the factors into rationing of care. Things like that.
Yeah, at the end of the day, you have to put a price on things, right? It's just like they put a price on roads because you know certain people are going to die, or in bridges and things like that. So at the end of the day, you know, OSHA has to calculate how much, right? How much a business has to spend, and that's the same issue, right? Pikkulah Nefesh is dough for everything. You have to throw all your money at Pikkulah Nefesh, but at the same, if you throw all your money at Pikkulah Nefesh, there are no iPads, right? So you know, has the seller of Tedler in the Hebrew version of his article. He said, like, you know, can you imagine a world with no museums, right? There's no, at least I understood it, right? There's no, in the world without poetry, there's nothing, right? You know, you can't have a world that way. In the English version of the article, he says that, you know, that every time he drives the New Jersey Turnpike and he sees this giant machine mowing the median grass, like saying, like, what the money is spent on that machine, right? It could be in cancer research. Why are we mowing the median grass? right. So you know, it's, everyone has their, you know. So, but we really want a society which is that tight to essentials, only essentials in medical, right, until we have perfect medical care. Right. Aside from the things that maybe if you throw money at things, eventually you get to the law of diminishing returns, all sorts of things like that. Okay. Right. I think we're dealing with the same kind of problem. But the way Rav Avadia sets it up, look, it's just machlokas between Tosfos and the Ramban. And the Ramban makes, you know, I thought the Ramban made an excellent point. But you know, it's an interesting, we could ask the question this way halakhically, right? Suppose you have $1,000 and you can have this, you can do two things with $1,000. You can save a life or you can redeem a captive. What should you do? So, according to Tosfos, it's clear that right, that you save the life. But it turns out redeeming captives isn't really that big a mitzvah. Right? That's what Ramban says. Like, you know, why are you you tell me all the time that the redeeming captives is the biggest mitzvah, and then all of a sudden it turns out, no, except for that mitzvah. Yeah. Right? And you said the reason is because it includes death. Yeah, but you didn't really mean that, right? So Ramban's calling you, right? Calling the rhetoric. Like, you know, you were being hyperbolic. You know, you can't, right, be, you know, you can't do that, right? If you're going to use the hyperbole to build the mitzvah up, then you can't all of a sudden say that, right, that it changes. And Tosfos says, no, it's hyperbole. You know what? I never told you that you should. Right? No one ever really thought that you should take money intended for, right, that it would be used for because I've even used it to redeem captives. That doesn't make any sense. Okay, that's the Machlokas Ramban and Tosfos. And Rav Avadia at this point says, which is not such a, I don't think this is so common, but I think he just says, you know, wow, that's a great kasha. even though Tosfos says that death is different, and the Piskei Tosfos Paskins like it, and the Merikash Paskins like it, but you know, the Ramban just blew him out of the water. Ramban just totally blew him out of the water. So Ramban just says, if this is where we were, I couldn't Paskin like Tosfos. But he's redeemed. So right now we get the page 9. He says, Ulam, Hineha Me'iri Gittin writes the following. Kvar bi'arnu she'ein podnus ha'shvim yesrael k'devi d'meim. We already said that, right? That we don't redeem captives above their value. Ulam mishum docher tzibura, not because of, right, we're afraid of the economic impact. Elam mitam adli garabu v'lai sutfei, but we're afraid of the practical impact. Hilchach afilu b'poda atzvo krovim ashirim, ein marshim l'tosio t'yotir echli d'mav. Therefore, we don't even allow private parties to redeem captives above their worth. Except you can redeem yourself. Okay, fine. That's Tosfos wrote. Now let me read this. And some people ask, Amar Rabbi Yeshua, Avoda, right? We have our stories. So what do you do about that? So Vieshlomar, Shazubish Asa Churban, Haitav Ein Lachush Ligarbut Fesh, or Kulam Galuvinishbu. So he also has the Ramban. Right, that's a great answer. The Churban is different. Although that's already, right, the language here is Ramban, but the skeleton was in Tosfos. O Shema Kol Sheyesh Chashash Mita, Ein LeDavar Kitzva. Right, but right, maybe every time there's a risk of death, then there's no limit to how much you pay. The Afal Pish Amru B'Vabasra Chet Amibet Derech Klal Shavoy Kulu Isnu Be, even though they said as a matter of general state, right, a general truth, that captivity contains everything within it. Mikol makom shvish ikar lemamon ein bo chashash misa. So, right, that really, he says, really, that was totally hyperbole. Right, all we're trying to explain is, right, there's a verse, and the verse lists things in order, and we're trying to claim that captivity is worse than it, right, is worse than the other things in that verse because, right. Right, because it contains all of them. It doesn't mean that every captivity contains all of them. It means that in captivity, there can be all of them. But if in certain kinds of captivity, there's no risk. And when people are captured for the sake of ransom, there's no risk. And the decree about redeeming captives above their value was only about captivity, which was primarily for money. Okay, so Miri is perfectly happy to say, Ramban said you can't, right? You can't have it both ways. Mary says, yes, you can. We never meant that Pinyon Shvuyim was the greatest of all mitzvot because all Shvuyim suffer the worst things in the world. We meant that because captivity contains lots of things, so you can see Pinyon Shvuyim is a really important mitzvah, and sometimes it's even more important, like when there's a risk of death. All right, so this is Rav Avadya's get out of jail free card. That he doesn't have to make the claim that the Gemara is just engaged in rhetoric. The Meiri already made the claim for him, and since the Meiri solves the Ramban's question, now we can go back to authority. Tosfos says that death is the risk of death is enough. The Piskei Tosfos passing like Tosfos, Varikash passing like Tosfos, right. But it's I don't know of another case offhand, but where Avadya takes a question is so powerful. And then just as I got rid of the question, so now I'm back, right? So the question of overwhelmed authority, and now I'm back. I go back to authority because the question isn't so powerful. Okay. So that's the fundamental, right? Now the cost of this is a redeeming captives when there's no risk of death. Turns out not to be the most important mitzvah in the world. It just turns out to be something that should be given high priority when there are discretionary communal funds. And the Entebbe case has nothing to do with redeeming captives. The Entebbe case is about saving lives. Okay, right, that's the move. That's the move we have. And that's useful in terms of if you really buy this tshuva, because there are other cases where people talk about redeeming captives as the biggest mitzvah, particularly when people are imprisoned and whether they're innocent or guilty. But in prisons where there isn't a risk of death, so the United States prison system, where for the average prisoner, especially a white collar prisoner, Otisville, whatever, right? There isn't the greatest. So the notion that that we should spend money on redeeming people from such, right? Yeah, maybe there are lots of kinds of captivity. Right? I think once we've decided that it's not a resume opens up the thing that captivity is not a uniform thing, and every captive has to be freed at any expense, so we can say no, right? Actually, no. Redeeming captives is a big mitzvah, and it matters what kind of captivity they're in, and it matters why. And we shouldn't redeem captives above the market value. And that's not always a consideration, because, for example, let's suppose you want to redeem somebody who has been imprisoned for dealing drugs in some other country where dealing drugs is not a death penalty, right? We're not in Singapore. So the Jewish community have a major obligation to redeem people who have been convicted of minor drug offenses in countries where the imprisonment is unpleasant but not deadly. So there's no risk that they're going to imprison. If you don't think the charges were trumped up because they were Jewish, it's unlikely, right? There's no hint that people did it because they want the community to bribe them. They did it because that's the way their justice system works. So there's no risk of, right? So you might think, okay, that goes back to Aphelios or Alkadei Demayim, because there's no risk of, it's like the Churban. So we should spend all our money on bailing Jews out of prison in countries where they did things wrong. Or maybe not. Maybe not, because Pinyon Shvuyim is a graduated mitzvah. We need to think very hard about circumstances and risks, right? So that's the thing the Miri opens up, and I think that point of the Miri is very true. Now, on the other hand, the proof from Yishuv Bechanania is not very, right, is very uncompelling, and the culture can in the Gemara is very uncompelling. Okay, so now we get to other evidence, which doesn't seem right, which starts off being along the same line, but we have to read this Marashal carefully. And see if we can understand what the Marshal is saying. Right? That's our agenda for the next 10 minutes. So the Marshal, the Chayin Pasuk Marshal, we're in the middle of the page. Rav Avadya said, Lefiza, I should read his language again, right? Lefiza, Adayin Yeshlanu Makom Lifsok Yedirei Tosfos. Right? The Meiri lets us have room to Paskin like Tosfos again. And guess what? The Marshal Paskins that way. Great. So the Marshal Yam Shel Shlomo Paskins exactly that way. And here's the language of the Marshal. It says Venira Be'enai, it seems to me. Shekishem Shesakanat Nefashod Bitla Had Ein Podin Kishana Vashilesh, Hachanami Shebitla Had Ein Podin Sashvuim Yosemich Dei Domain. So the Marshal says, yeah, we put the two sugyas together. You're not supposed to redeem somebody who sells themselves into slavery to non-Jews, right? Certainly not if they did it right. They did it right. And here we're going to do it. So just like we redeem people, even multiple times they sold themselves into slavery, right? That was the whole dialogue, right? With Rabbi Ami also about whether he sold, whether this was the first time, and he said no, he does it regularly. So just like the risk of death suspends the rule against redeeming people multiple times, so too it suspends the rule against redeeming people above their value. I have to go back and see whether it's really true that the sugya necessarily proves that. Okay, but now he says something else. The chayin kasavos over it. Right, the next Ariel Fon. D'chein kasav o b'yam shel Shlomo sham simen samach vav v'zeh l'shono. V'ha'idna, but nowadays. Anshe Yisrael gomli chasodim b'yartzos turgema v'svivoteha. The Jews who are gracious, right, in the land of Turkey and its surroundings. Now we're in the 16th century, so we're early Ottoman Empire, right? Right, that's what he means. Podimus Ashruim Yosir Vyosir Michte Demehen. Right. So Jews pay well above market value for their prisoners. And there is a slave market. And we pay well above, right? We pay well above market price for Jews. Umivatri Maldoka de Sipura, and we don't care about the economic interest. Vashem Yosif Lahem al Scharam. And God will repay them greatly. And because we are sadly a diminished minority, right? Because there's so few Jews, we just can't afford to let any of them go. Because maybe the Jewish people will die out if we don't redeem captives. That's like a fascinating claim. I think it's very unlikely that captivity, like there are enough Jews in captivity, and the whole thing is that there's going to be more Jews in captivity. So this is bad strategy. Nonetheless, this is what he says. Umagam leesos shemachbidim al shvui Yisrael binuyeim bisurin kashim vakufim lavor al datam lachalal shabbat yontos shlo lesarech. And again, the Jews who are captured are often subject to religious discrimination. So there's a reason that we have to pay more than other people, because Jews suffer more in captivity, and there's another risk that they're forced to violate their religion, so we have to pay more. And you know what? There's also anti-Semitism. So even though ordinarily captors don't kill captives, because you don't gain anything by killing your captives, right? You just lose, right? Because people pay less for bodies than they do. But maybe Jews are more subject, because as with Entebbe, right? Maybe the hijackers prefer to kill Jews. And maybe they're willing to kill Jews, right? Not getting money for them. Therefore, if it's got nefeshes, pudim afilo biyotir bichte demehen, l'chein nadvar rucham levavam otam liftos ashrum afilo biyotir bichte demehen. So this becomes a really powerful statement. The Yamashal Shlomo says the minhag is that Jews in... Right, the Jews, as far as he knows it, he's living in Poland, but he understands that the minhag of the Jews is that we redeem captives in the area, right, in the area of the Ottoman Empire, where the Turkish pirates, because we're good people and we can't afford to lose any Jews, and it's worse for Jews in captivity than anybody else, and God will repay us. So, like, this is a wild thing. It's like, you know, he started off with a halachic argument, and he just wandered off, right? And so, this is the thing that becomes very powerful in lots of contemporary presentations. Say, look, you can see that really what happened is that even in the time of the Gemara, the Gemara says, but Levi Bardarga did it, and the answer is, well, maybe he didn't do it Ritzon Chachamim, but when the whole Jewish people decides not to act Ritzon Chachamim, so then halacha changes. This decree didn't work. And basically, right, this decree or at least it didn't work in whatever the intention of Chazal was, it didn't work. It didn't work in cases, right? People were not able to bring themselves not to redeem captives who were genuinely at risk of death. So maybe the halachi conversation is pointless. But now the Marshal throws in one other step. He says there's a famous counterexample. Says Hosif. Hine shamati el marami Rodenberg, sheya tafus b'migdal aigzim kamashanim, v'asar tava mikilat Yisrael sach gadol, uvikshu lifte tov lo nichamarav, ki amar, ein podin esashvuim yoter michtei demand. The great counterexample is Rav Meir of Rothenburg, where this is 13th century, is imprisoned by his local baron in an attempt to get the Jews to pay ransom, and the Jews want to pay ransom because Marami Rothenburg is the great of the generation. And he says, no, ain't putting us to shame yoser mitzvah debate. So, right, and he sits in prison until the end of his life. So, what? I thought we were right. So you could say, well, Marami Rothenburg wasn't in danger of death, and that doesn't prove anything, and that's right. So that's true. Marami Rothenburg wasn't in, right, probably wasn't in danger of being killed. We could also talk about what prison means, right? Because he was in noble prison. Right? He had a court, and right, you know, and people could come visit him. He just couldn't leave. But right, but he was, you know, but there's a difference between a prison being a place where you can't leave and a prison, which is a place that's really, really unpleasant. I don't think that we have evidence that Marami Rothenburg was mistreated. Right? So that's all right. So we could talk about it as a different kind of pidyon shvuyim. Furthermore, there's no, you know, it's a whole different case because here is not a, here is not pirates or captors, right? It's the government. And how we react to a government discriminating against people, right? And imprisoning people is not the same thing as, right, as an army capturing people. But nonetheless, the Yashar Shlomo realizes that, like, you know, his vision is somewhat disrupted by the Marami Rotenberg's action. And he says, Utsmihani, Me'achar she'ya muflag b'chachma, v'lo iniach kimoto b'doro b'tora v'chasidut, and at the very least, the Rabbi Shimon Mechanania principle applies. Rami Rotenberg is already the greatest of the generation. Right? So if you're going to redeem a kid who's going to grow up to be the Rami Rotenberg, of course you should redeem the Rami Rotenberg. So what's going on here? The Ashtemir Rovan of Nusil, the Rasula Achizigatsmo, Talmud Chacham Buflag. And I maybe say, you know what? Maybe he was just engaging in false modesty. I'm not really so great at Talmud Chacham. You can take that kid over there, right? And he'll grow up to be better. No, but so the Rebbe says, you should be wrong. No, he should, right? He had no right to be modest because actually he was diminished as a teacher. Right? Not as many people could hear him. So he should have, right? So he should have understood how important it was. There is actually an important shu of the Marami Rotenberg where he writes about something that he realized while he was in the captivity. And it's like, you realize like there are things you don't have. Because he's read his Chuvador scraps and let all their thing. It would have been great if he had been out. It would have been great if he'd been out. Okay. The Tzarech Lomar, Shadato Haisash Imiftu, Yesh Lachush Penya Surim Kerim Ligdolia Dor Bavur Rov Mamon. Actually, Yaspik Mamon Shalkolagol if Dosam, Visishtakach Aturami Israel. Okay, it has to be the Marami Rotenberg did this because he was afraid that if he were redeemed, then. Right, then they would cap. They would do this to all the great scholars, and eventually the money would run out. And when the money ran out, they would all the great Talmid Chacham would be sitting in jail, and that would be the end of Torah. So Rami Rotenberg did it for the sake of the preservation of Torah, because had he allowed himself to be redeemed, all of Torah would have died out. And that's the only way we can possibly excuse him for preventing them from engaging in Pinyon Shvuyim. So I don't know why he doesn't just say Rami Rotenberg wasn't in danger of death. Except that the problem is that Tosfos, right? Tosfos' second answer is a muflag. You can redeem a Talmid Chacham. Okay, but we say you can redeem a Talmid Chacham. Who says you have to redeem a Talmid Chacham? There are all sorts of ways the Marshal could have gotten out of it, and he doesn't. Perhaps because he realizes, as you see in his above thing, that there isn't really such a great risk that the captives that are being redeemed above their value in his time are going to get killed either. Right, he's worried about right? Because the whole point of it is that they don't usually kill people. And he's worried, maybe because they're Jews and they're anti-Semites, they're going to kill them. But that's not right. We're dealing with a game of people being captured for ransom. Okay, so that is the primary sources. There's the Tosfos as against the Tosfos. There's the Ramban. There's a Meiri who resolves the Kasha of the Ramban on Tosfos, and then that is supported by the Marikash, the Pitzkei Tosfos, the Marshal. Marshal then goes much further and says, actually, like, this halacha just doesn't apply at all nowadays. He acknowledges the counterexample of the Maram and gives Alnir Dati a fairly feeble answer in response to that. So that's where we are. We're going to, but in a moment, we're going to see that, next week, we're going to see that there is a famous tshuva in which somebody actually seems to say, no, actually, you know, yeah, his life is at risk, but don't redeem him. And so, like, how could we have this claim, it's Minhag Yisrael, everybody, you know, that, oh, yeah, and yet there's going to be a tshuva of somebody who goes the other way. So we're going to read that tshuva, and then we're going to see what Rav Avadia does with it. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Thank you.